Okay, I feel like I'm not prepared for this.
Okay, I feel like I'm prepared for this.
I did think Hannes would be on this one.
Okay, let's see. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Further Research Needed, the safe space for scientists. I am Jan-Philipp Reising, and as usually, I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts.
Hey, I'm Hannes Feirer.
Hey, I'm Chris Wu.
You're listening to the podcast with the straightforward questions that don't have straightforward answers. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. Each one of us has brought a number that the other two are going to guess. And if this goes well, we're probably going to make it into a recurring segment. So I'm really excited for this, and let's jump right into it. Hannes, what is your number?
Cheers.
Cheers.
What I want you guys to guess today is the rotational speed of the Earth in Stockholm.
Oh, Jesus.
Speed. That is... Okay, right. So we need to predict... Well, we know the time period, 24 hours, and we need to predict the diameter of the sphere at Stockholm that's rotating around.
Maybe.
Man, I have no idea.
Okay.
Wait, what's the model you're using, Phil, Chris? What just happened with the diameter? What did you?
So I am thinking of a spinning sphere, which we know spins. Takes 24 hours to make a full rotation, mm-hmm. By definition, I suppose. And then I'm taking a sphere and plotting where Stockholm is on that sphere, mm-hmm. and then looking at the circle that Stockholm will describe as it circles around the sphere.
Right.
So I don't even know where Stockholm is on the sphere to start with. Like, it's,
I guess that's
on
where
the top of the sphere.
That's where the guessing part comes in, right?
Up in north. So I would say, if I'm looking at the northern hemisphere, Stockholm is... what? 3/4 of the way up from the equator?
No, that sounds like a reasonable guess.
So then I need to know the radius of the Earth.
Do you?
Do I?
Do you?
Well, you need to know the circle that it's running on, right?
I'll need a measurement to start with. So...
Right, so, well, that's not the approach I had when I was thinking of this question, but before I give anything away, maybe Philip wants to tell us what he's thinking.
So what you're saying is this, right? If you're saying specifically for Stockholm, then what you're saying it is different depending on where on Earth you are, right?
Well, obviously. That's...
But what is the, like, is the difference that big if you're on the equator versus...
On the poles?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, the poles...
Yeah, the poles are
somewhere,
right, exactly.
So it's somewhere between maximum and zero.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Chris said, like, 3/4 up.
What's the dependency between that?
Isn't it just a proportion? Like, if you... Wait a second. If you're... You just divide it by 3/4. So... If you go, it's like a percent, like a proportion of the speed or the distance you would describe at the equator, and it goes to zero as you change the angle at which you're away from the center.
But it's probably not linear. So even on the, if you have like a perfect ball,
it's not linear, no. But it
should be a sine or a cosine.
Exactly. Start with one and you end up at zero as a cosine.
Okay.
But also, you know, the rotational. Speed at the equator, right?
Not off the top of my head.
You,
I'm sorry.
You don't know the circumference of the Earth.
No, that was the question. Right. That's what I wanted from you.
Oh, that was your guessing question.
Well, either radius or circumference. I can work one from the other. Like.
Okay, so it's just one of the numbers I know. I just know. I guess.
I feel like this is just going to be us, like. Making fun of like random esoteric knowledge that we each have,
right?
That we think is obvious.
No, but I think that's the fun of it. So if we don't know the radius or the circumference, then we have to guess it, right? That's the whole point.
Okay.
But Chris obviously knows because that was his question, right? It's the number he brought today.
No, I have no idea. Oh. I do not know the radius of the...
I thought you looked up the number before because that's what I did. I did the calculation already just to see if I was kind of in the ballpark.
But you said you knew before all of this, you just happened to know the size of the Earth.
Yes, this I just happened to know. And then I was estimating the rotational speed.
Okay, I think for me, you're going to have to tell me a number to start.
No. We're just going to guess it. And then see how far we are off. So what I usually do is I think of a number that's, what's the lowest limit that's possible? What's the highest limit? Like it's more than 1 meter, right? It's more than 10 meters. It's more than a kilometer. It's more than 10, 100. Is it more than 100 kilometers?
The circumference of the Earth?
Yeah.
No, radius. I'm thinking about radius.
Why radius?
Because then you can calculate the circumference. Oh. I think radius is easier to guess than the circumference, right?
Really? I feel like the radius of the Earth is so inaccessible just because the distances we talk about are on the surface, not into the sphere, right? That's why I feel...
Okay, like, so you're saying
whatever works for you, right?
Okay, let's try this. If you go by plane from London to New York, how long is that going to take?
8 hours.
8 hours. Okay. So that's about how much of the whole circumference if you just kept going?
Quarter?
Yeah, I would guess the same.
So I think the new flight they have, or I think this is the first flight from England to Australia directly. I think they started doing this last year. I think that's 22 hours.
Okay, 22 hours is a good... That's probably about the half the...
Close, yeah.
Yeah, circumference of the world, so...
So let's say 48 hours then, to have like a nice round number.
Okay, so I can...
Planes fly at 3,000 kilometers an hour?
But not on ground speed, but they fly like 10 kilometers above. But I guess that's maybe with an error. The other thing to maybe make this easier is if you do any kind of Fermi approximation, that's this method not really lower or higher. You would just assume a order of magnitude that it's in. It's like 10 to the 2, 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4, and then you're just happy with that.
So I'm working in 130,000 kilometers. That's my estimate.
Circumference.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Okay. So let's call it 150,000 just to make the numbers easier.
Why not 100? Then you're in a straight like 10 to the 5, right?
So 100. So I think...
It's more like 40,000. You think it's how much? 150,000?
Yeah.
How did you get to 40,000?
I'm assuming that planes are slower than...
3,000 kilometers an hour.
I think so, yeah. I think they're more like 800.
Speed of sound, 1,200 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, so then a normal passenger flight is not faster than...
No, but Concorde could get there, so they're in the same realm. So 3,000 is a good... 4,000 is reasonable.
But Hannes said 1,200 for... Right? One Mach is 1,200?
Yeah.
Or what did you say? Oh, sorry, I was way up.
So I think it's like 800, and I think so then you would, if you think it's like 48 hours, let's say 50 hours to go like once across the globe, 800 kilometers an hour, then you're at 40,000, right?
Makes sense.
50 times 800. And I now that I have the number, I think it's like 42,000 kilometers or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I think 40,000 is pretty close. So I'm imagining like the half globe, and then you're trying to figure out, okay, what's the degree if you plot like a straight line to the edge of the world from the center, like what's the percentage where you think Stockholm is lying on?
Yeah.
And it's pretty far up, and it's so 90 degrees would be the North Pole,
yeah,
and zero would be the equator, so we think it's more than 45 degrees. So something between 45 degrees and 90 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
60, something like that.
Yeah, 60. I would have said 70, so maybe take the average, 65.
65, okay.
So then we need to know what the...
Sine 65.
Cosine.
Cosine
65. I have no idea. Do you have, a calculator, right?
Yeah, I can do it. Okay, so this comes up as 0.42.
Mm-hmm.
So times that by 42,000, which is actually a good number. 17,000.
And then we do that every 24 hours, right?
Yeah, we know how to get speed. Oh, it's going on forever. 17.
So divided by 24.
So, Philip, are you happy that we're done here?
Yeah, I think so.
I have used my calculator to get the sine, and because I'm lazy to do the final division. So the final answer we're going for is 735 kilometers an hour.
Amazing. So amazing. So you didn't know any number, right? And what you basically did is measure the circumference of the slice Stockholm is on perpendicular to the axis of the Earth,
mm-hmm.
and calculated the time this would take to do one rotation of 24 hours, and then divided this circumference by 24.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way I would have done it is calculate the speed at the equator, because that's the number I know, and then times it by cosine of the latitude of Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to this is the same principle, just a different way of doing
start,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly, but it's the same thing. So the number you guessed for the circumference of the Earth is 42,000? 40,000.
Yeah.
That's spot on.
Oh, wicked. Well done.
The latitude of Stockholm is 60. 60 degrees north.
You said 65.
Super,
yeah,
close. Super close.
Chris was pretty close.
Was,
yeah.
Right.
And then the rotation speed at the equator is 1,660 kilometers per hour. Which gives you the cosine of 60 is exactly 0.5, which gives you 833 kilometers an hour at the level of Stockholm. So it's a super good guess.
Yeah.
From so we're like 100 kilometers
nothing from the
off.
Beginning. Basically, what you base this on is the
speed,
time.
The speed of a flight.
Exactly. The time of a flight. Wow, super good. I'm impressed.
Yeah, that was really nice. Yeah, cool.
It's a good learning experience for me. I found out that I'm going much slower in jets than I thought.
Okay, let's think about it. Like, how much off are we in terms of percentages? It's like 1/8.
1/8, it's great.
So it's like 12%. That's
awesome.
Pretty nice, and we're definitely within an order of magnitude.
Yeah.
I count in an order of magnitude as a win in this guessing game, because...
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's more than you would expect.
Chris, what did you bring?
Okay, the number I want you to estimate is there's two phases to it. One is the length of the DNA molecule. If you lined all of the DNA in your cell up and stretched it out into a single line, how long would that be?
All the DNA molecules in one cell.
In one cell. And then...
So like we'll one see. After the other. So like every string of DNA
so
next
you,
to
you
the
know,
next
like,
one.
Packed into the nucleus with mm-hmm. all of the whatever you just take one end of the start of the DNA molecule and you start to unravel it, pulling it all the way out straight along, and then you don't pull it past any length or anything. You're just letting it at rest be a straight line without any proteins or anything, and you take each chromosome and you put it end to end and you line it up outside the cell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel like I'm not prepared for this.
Okay, I feel let's like I'm prepared for this.
I did think Hannes would be on this one.
Okay, let's see. Is this your guess or your final answer?
This is my final answer.
Really?
Wait, do you know the answer? Completely?
Yeah, I think I've heard people, several times
okay.
heard people say 2 meters about this number.
Okay, Philip, do you want to try and guess it from first principles?
I think Hannes and I should guess this. I'm not going to do this alone. I think we're
okay,
better
okay,
in a team.
If Hannes knows that answer, then the extension of this is how much is in a whole body if you take all the cells in the body and line it all up.
Right.
Or not.
So we have 3 billion base pairs, and the number of chromosomes should matter because they form one continuous line, right?
Yep.
3 billion bases, base pairs. It's the same thing in the end.
So how long is each base pair, right, is the question then?
I don't tell anyone I'm working in nucleic acid biophysics.
One nucleic acid. I mean, how many atoms is it? And then we can guess, like, one H atom is 1 to the power of...
No, this,
or 10 to the power of minus 10.
I don't think starting from a proton gets us anywhere.
No, it's not a proton. It's the whole atom.
A hydrogen atom. Right, sorry, for a hydrogen bond. I want to say the distance between two stacked base pairs is something like 2 angstroms or something. Could be
angstrom.
A bit more. Maybe.
So 1 angstrom is
no,
what
more
I
like 4.
Said, right?
Sorry?
1 angstrom is 10 to the power of minus 10, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
0.1 nanometers. I want to
so
say
you're saying
the distance between two base pairs is roughly 4.
Okay. I can live with that. So what's the thickness then?
The thickness of the entire... what? Which...
So now we have the distance, right? But you have distance and thickness.
Oh, sorry,
of
two base pairs are stacked on top of each other. So the distance between two the ongoing helix is, like, I want to say 4 nanometers, 4 angstroms, which there is some error on this for sure.
But then it's easy, right? Then we just multiply those numbers and we have a...
By 3 billion, right? Yeah, that's where what I wish. I would at least in the kind of right order of magnitude by 4. To the minus 10.
So that would be 1.2 meters.
Oh, that's sounds reasonable.
You guys are spot on for my own back calculation of this. Mm-hmm. That's how I got to it. I got to 1.2 meters.
Oh, really?
Cool.
Yeah. Hannes, you can continue doing your PhD. You were spot on for distance between... it varies slightly because of different types of helix, but it's about 3... It can go from about 0.3 to 0.4, average being about 0.35, something like that, 3.6. So, yeah. You got 1.2 meters of DNA per cell. Oddly, when you Google a question, you get an answer of 2 meters from some PopSci websites. So I don't know where they're getting that number from because they don't show they're working.
Yeah.
And I mean, a question would be like, if you took some DNA and used an AFM to pull it and see how long it stretch out to, maybe you add a bit of force onto the DNA and
you could definitely stretch
it out.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, well done. 1.2 meters.
Awesome.
Spot on.
And I mean, then again, we're like definitely within an order of magnitude, right? And I don't, like, nobody has actually tested this. So if you're like 2 or 1.2 or 0.2 meters, it's probably like no one has an actual answer to this.
I mean, I guess we're kind of lucky, or maybe Chris neither, that I do have some kind of idea of distances within molecules, especially nucleic acids. I don't know how I would approach this if I had no idea.
I think taking, like, as you were trying to do, taking the distance of one bond and thinking that they're stacked on top of each other, so it's probably going to take like 3, you know, a layer of atoms is going to be one bond between them and one bond between the other. So approximately 3 layers, 4 layers is about right for the, for the flat packing of atoms.
Yeah, it could be that, that you would end up, I mean, the error would be larger, but of course you would end up with the same, still in the same order of magnitude probably.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Philip, what did you bring?
Okay, so mine is a bit different. Not as physical.
Too bad.
I was wondering how many scientists are currently doing research on Earth?
Wow.
Ooh, nice.
And we're counting everyone who is getting paid. If you're a bachelor student doing a bachelor thesis, you do not count into this calculation.
Okay.
I guess I would start by taking an average country, estimating the number of cities large enough to have universities, and finding a ratio of scientists to entire population or something like that. What would you start to do, Chris?
I was actually going to go it another way. Well, it's difficult to take the estimate for populations of scientists per head, per country from a high GDP country to a low GDP country, because I imagine it doesn't scale linearly with population. So I was thinking of another way of calculating it, in the sense that income. No, I was thinking like income brackets and whether you could say that scientists globally will be in the, say, top 40% of the world, taking the estimation down from that.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine the definition of being a scientist is quite loosely described, but you'd certainly be in a higher income bracket relative to the bulk of the population.
How does that help you? Do you know anything of income brackets, of the distribution?
I was actually going from just, you know, like the top 1% or whatever. okay, that's not gonna help. Hannes, do you know the percentages of people going to university in Germany or Sweden? That's a little bit from that. Because I would say, like, in a university, about 60% of the roles would be science-based. More, probably 70% of science outrepresents the humanities when it comes to jobs.
That's the scientists employed by universities or the students studying science.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah,
yeah, I guess maybe you should just start much, much cruder by saying something like, let's take Sweden with 10 million inhabitants, roughly. We have, like, what's the order of magnitude of universities we have there? It's more like 1, more like 10, more like 100, or more like 1,000. I want to say, there's many small ones, but I want to say more towards 10
than towards 100.
Actually, maybe it's not
true. My gut feeling would be somewhere like Sweden, say 10% of the population would be employed in a science-related role. Straight out of nowhere, I would say that.
Like, right. I don't want to make that assumption. I want to say for a country like Sweden, let's say we have 100 universities, and each university has something like 1,000 employees.
But it's not just university-based. They have like drug companies and...
The number I found, I think, is just university or academia.
Scientists. I think that's what Philip was going at.
Because it's really hard if you're like working for Bayer, like, are you...
Yeah, or imagine did a PhD in biology and now you're a CEO in a bank.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's academic. Academia and getting paid.
Right.
Oh, okay. That completely changed. Sorry. Yeah. That's why I was going for this like 10% number, because I was like, well, like the amount that science contributes to the economy. So, anyway,
right.
Yeah,
let's just stay with an order of magnitude. So I want to say Sweden, 10 to the 7 people, 10 to the 3 universities, not 10 to the 2 universities with each 10 to the 3 employees. Right. Mm-hmm. How many people is that? 10 to the 5 out of 10 to the 7.
So a percent. 1% exactly. I think 1% is good.
As you said, we're probably vastly overestimating based being on a high income country. I mean, this would leave 1% of the current population with 7 billion people. It would leave 70 million, right?
That sounds high.
Sounds high. Cool.
It's half that.
I'm going to halve that and I'd like to submit it as my number. 35 million people.
Okay. You happy with that, Chris?
I kind of want to go lower than that. But I think that we're now just making up numbers. So let's sit there with that.
Okay. So I actually tried something similar in the beginning, what you guys did. So I looked at the number of countries we have, the number of universities, and the number of scientists per university.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know any of these numbers. I haven't looked up how many countries there are on Earth. Do you know the answer?
A bit less than 200.
Okay, so I guess 200 to 400
took
the average. I think I might be way off. Number of universities.
In total.
What do you guys think? Per country.
Per country. Like
how many universities do you have?
I mean, countries span from... countries span from Liechtenstein with 30,000 people to China with 1.4 billion.
Does Liechtenstein have a university?
I think so, but...
I assumed you have at least one university for a country.
One, yes.
Maybe the Vatican doesn't have one, but everybody else should have at least one. And I think like a country with a lot of universities would be like 100 universities.
Mm-hmm.
So like the average of that would be 50. And then the number of scientists, somewhere between 500 and 5,000. So let's say 3,000 and you end up with 45 million. So yeah. Pretty similar to the estimate that you guys got.
Sorry, what was your number?
45
million. 45 million. Huh, that's interesting.
Worldwide. But the UNESCO has some numbers and they say it's 8
million.
8 yeah. million worldwide.
Makes much more sense, I guess.
I think that's fair because we're taking that, like Sweden is like the upper end of a developed science-based
economy. Well, I still don't know if this 1% is actually a good guess or it's also way off. But I just find it interesting how we use two different methods to determine that. Mine of like just guessing an order of magnitude that we're in while you guess a lower and upper number and take the average. It's two very different methods.
Yeah, but similar result. So I found an estimate that's maybe a bit better. So I was thinking about publications per year. And then you can calculate or get an estimate from there. So do you know how many publications there are per year?
But I said that's all.
It's all guessing. That one's really, really difficult.
Here. Well, now I know we have like 8 million scientists.
50,000. Okay, so the estimate I found is 2 million.
No.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty... Because it's all the sciences, right?
Which means we have one publication per 4 scientists a year. That's reasonable.
It's about right, I suppose.
Yeah, so that's a guesstimate I did.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, where are they all publishing these papers?
In all these journals we're hitting on.
Yeah. Actually, I suppose you need to estimate how many papers there are per journal per year and then work out how many journals there are. Mm. This could go on for. We could just go down this rabbit hole of guessing
yeah,
numbers.
So. True.
When it comes to the physical stuff, we're really close to like the reality, and this stuff seems to be a lot harder. So if I would have looked at the questions before, I would have guessed the other way around.
Well, Philip, with your estimation of number of scientists on the planet, we're in the order of magnitude, right?
8 million to 35 million.
That's the same order of magnitude.
Yeah, okay. But it is quite far away.
Yeah, but then I think that's different because we know kind of there's a limit of things, right? There's just only so many people on the planet. While, let's say, for something like estimating the rotation speed of the Earth, it's almost arbitrary because we don't feel we have no relation to it. Could be a meter per second, could be 5 times as much, we still wouldn't feel it.
I really enjoyed the fact that you could get that from a plane speed. I like that. That was a really nice yeah. like translation through. That was cool.
This concludes our guessing game. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any comments or suggestions for the next round, you can reach us at contact@frn-podcast.com. And if you like this episode, consider subscribing in your favorite podcast app or check out our Patreon. See you in 2 weeks.